Hey, and welcome to another round of the Rugby Report Card. Jim, if you don't mind, can you give me a rendition of your best English song, please, mate? As you did the Flower of Scotland last week after England's fantastic win against Ireland. I just wondered if you wanted to jump in there, mate.
You're clutching, mate, aren't you? You are absolutely clutching. I watched your cricket team get their ass fucking handed to them.
Look at you changing an attack. Changing attack, James. That's not becoming of you. Let's move on. Blake.
No, but in all seriousness, mate, I'm British, mate. I'm not the one you should be asking. You should be asking Blake. This is a happy, joyous day for me. I'm elated with the victory.
You're British, are you? You're just collectively putting everyone together in terms of rugby. Awesome. Blake, how are you, mate?
Mate, I'm not interested in wins. I'm interested in moral victories. So I don't want to talk about England's rugby win. I want to talk about their moral victory in India.
That's true. You know what? The Wallabies have also achieved a moral victory by allowing Italy to go above them for the good of the game. You know, just down at 10th place now, the Wallabies. That's very, very good of you guys. Well done. Trying to obviously spread the love around the world. So thank you, Australia.
Haven't played a game this year. How can you go down in ranking, man? I'm not in. Rankings are a fucking joke. Just like the English rugby team.
What wasn't a joke, though, and I'm so happy to say this, is the Super Rugby competition at the moment. It's amazing what a few wins, a few competitive games, how it sparks the interest and the intrigue in the competition at the moment. I loved going out to Allianz on Friday. Neither of you two will probably be able to remember it, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You're damn right. It's a comp that's thriving. I'm very interested this year. I know it's only 2 weeks in, but there's something about it this year where you're like, I'm going to keep watching.
Well, Jim's only been watching for 2 weeks, but there's been three. But so you started well, Jim.
it's genuinely special, isn't it? I'm absolutely frothing it. And like, we've had to come on here in the past and force it. You know, it's round 8. No one's doing well, and come in here and find something.
Tell them. Tell them how hard it's been some weeks. Tell them.
It's been tough. It's been tough.
Sometimes. Nah, go on. Tell them.
But it is. I can't wait. I am so excited, looking forward to the weekend. It has just been outstanding. It's amazing what competition does, but I'll go beyond competition. It's genuinely been electric rugby. It feels like stoppages have been down. Handling been a bit better. We haven't seen as many cards. I don't know if it's a perception thing, but I am just frothing it. And all it took was the Crusaders to drop 3 games. And all of a sudden, Super Rugby seems incredibly competitive. It's just brilliant. Everywhere you look, there's a story playing out. It's the narratives within the games throughout the season that go along to complement these absolute nail biters that we just keep watching. I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, I think what's just to build on your point about the Crusaders, when was the last time that, because there's a very high chance that they lose round 4 because the Canes looked very tasty this week. When was the last time the Canes lost so many in a row? It was pretty crazy.
1996, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the start of the season. 0-3 was 96, and they're a pretty good chance of going 0-4.
I remember it. What a time.
Did you recall what was so special, Jim, other than the 0-3?
Just the domination of Australian rugby at that time. Like, we took it for granted. From memory, I remember, you know, looking up from my phone every now and then to see, there's the Satyrs losing again. What else is new? That was what was so special about that time.
Nice. Well, let's just go through very quickly the games from this week. And let's start off with the Rebels Pacifica, a really good game to start off with. You know, and look, the Rebels got it done in the end, got a bit nervous near the end, but the set piece won it in the end, really, for the Rebels. But Pacifica are a really good watch, and I think they're going to, a lot of teams are going to trip up against them this year. I think they're a lot stronger than what they have been in the previous years. Thoughts, boys?
They were due, Pacifica. Some absolute battles. Yeah, a few battle Stalingrads that they had to go through the last 2 weeks, and I just didn't think they had the legs this week. You don't do shit like that and recover in a week. You just don't. You don't get tested week in, week out, and then come up and having to come into the game back from behind, not the favourite. Like, that's really, really challenging on the players. So we're never really, you know, in my mind, in the comp in this one.
Yeah, and I think just to echo the thoughts, just at set piece, you know, not just near the end of the game, but set piece, you know, if you look at the scrum already mentioned, but line out functioned reasonably well for the Rebels as well. So lots of basics done well. And look, you know, what's amazing, what a good or a kind draw or do cheer. There's a lot of good chat. I'm looking forward to the Rebels Reds game next week. That's a bit more of a litmus test. I think we could all agree how that's going to go, but good start for the Rebels. Blake?
I watched this one on the train into the rugby. So I think I watched the first 40 or 50 really, really intently and then got to Central Station. Didn't get to watch the last part of it as well. But I was really, really impressed by the Rebels. I thought they showed up the week before after just being completely absent in the first two rounds. And when they ran on, they're a big pack and they all like to carry. I call them the anti-Brumbies. And I actually think for post-contact meters going into this round, going into this round, they were 100 meters ahead of any other side for post-contact meters for the competition. And I don't think they will be knocked off first place after this game. They have a lot of forwards that like to carry the ball. And they carried really, really well. Both of their second rowers play like rugby league props. They just truck it up and look for the offload with a bit of skill. Leota obviously didn't last the game. He had a knee injury, but he's devastating. And Ekuase, who came on at 7 because they lost, whatchamacallit, he's clearly not a 7, but Jesus, another big ball carrier. I think when the Rebels are getting over the gain line, if they can get their set piece there's enough about them that... You know, we knew this squad had enough about him. So I really like what I saw there. I think Lawrence is the 9. They pissed around in the first two rounds with that British bloke. but it should be Lawrence. And I think Carter Gordon had another absolute ripper of a game. And Andrew Callaway, the fastest man in Australian rugby. How good is he? He just finishes tries. You give that bloke an inch and he scores. Don't get me wrong. It's Moana Pacifica, and they only won by 6, but they were away from home in New Zealand. It's a win in New Zealand. I think the Rebels should be really, really happy with this performance. There's a lot to like about this Rebels side when you put the context of everything that they're suffering and going through at the moment. I think they did well, but I just like the way that they carry the ball. I do think they're probably light on in the back line outside of Callaway. Anyone else who can do much at all, but I thought they were good. I enjoyed it.
And I think to your point, you know, losing Brad Wilkie was a massive thing. And I think they may have been fortunate because of the draw, but he needs to come back in that game next week. As much as Ekuase played well, I think Brad Wilkie is a step above, but he definitely did do well. But you're right. A lot of those, the tight five played well, Salakai Loto played well. That Rose looking strong thing, but again, to your point, maybe it's looking at it with rose tinted glasses against the Pacifica team, but maybe they're building a little bit Rebels, but we might come
in and the front row, mate. Sam Talagos is a criminally underrated prop in this country. Everywhere he's been just scrummages very, very well and does a lot of work around the park as well, including carry. He's one of their props that can genuinely carry. I thought Gibbon, Talakai, and Ulisi just ripped him up front. And that's to think that they also have in the wings Pony, Tupo, and Murphy. I think when fit, that would be the replacement front row.
And I think that's such a good option, Pony and Tupo coming off the bench when, you know, teams are fatigued potentially, because you're right. I agree with your lack of stoppages. That doesn't seem to be as many. I mean, I think that was clear in the game on Friday that we went to. Having those players come on around the 50-60 mark, they're going to rip it apart. And just that set piece at the end, instead of it falling apart in the past for Rebels, is now going to continue to be a strength, but scrum.
Look, I like it. They've got ball-carrying props. It's not that common in Australia. I thought Ulisi had one of his better games. He's another always promising, never delivering, and I thought he had a ripper of a game.
Do you know what was promising but unfortunately didn't quite deliver? Was the Waratahs Highlanders game. Look, I love going out. I love going to live sport, even if you do spend a lot of the time at the bar. I love going to live sport, and the atmosphere, I was actually impressed with the atmosphere that was there. You know, I predicted 8,000 people turning up, and I saw it was in double digits in the end. But for me, there was a couple of things. First and foremost, kick your bloody goals. Second of all, there weren't times really needed to get over the line. Because to you, what you said the other day, the Highlanders aren't a great team, and to build momentum, they had to win this game. They just somehow. And there was a lot of silly mistakes. And I think it was poor quality at times, whether that was due to the good rush defense from both teams or whether it was just a lack of execution. To me, I would go more into the column that was a bit of a trying a bit too hard, lack of execution at times from both teams.
You're going to get no rugby analysis from me in this one. I was pissed.
You were not. You couldn't.
No, you know what? I didn't think it was, but mate, drawing a blank, I had a ball. How good's live footy? How good's rugby?
It's important to get out there. Sorry, you go, mate.
I just had a ripper of a time. I had lots of fun. It was great.
It's important to get out there and remind yourself just the physicality involved with this game. Yeah. You don't get it when you're watching through the box, but when you're there and you see, oh shit, that dude's absolutely massive.
Then he's
running as hard as he can into that shoulder. Like it's a very fatiguing game. It's a great game, but it does damage. One thing that stood out to me, I was also a few AI poured Heinekens in, but like the Tars were very, very slow to get their defensive structure set. They're always just arriving in time before the ball's out. Always on the back foot when there'd been a little bit of a mind break or they got too many sucked into the ruck, just sort of set themselves back up to a position where, you know, they were able to defend whatever was getting thrown at them. It was just always a bit slow and a bit late, and it was always back foot. And, you know, they were in it. They had their chance to win this game, absolutely. They did enough. They did enough. And I saw Ed Med taking kicks from the exact spot. That's why I didn't tell the ref that, it was over there. It's because, like, oh, man, I was kicking him from here before the game. And then, fuck, I don't know. You tell me. Youth, inexperience, too much pressure. I don't know. They kick that all over Europe. Pick one person out of any team that kick it in Europe.
Pinpointed lots of different things there, Jim, that we can talk about. Again, I can't talk too much about the game. But I would say it was almost an incredible week for Shane Rugby. Rebels won in New Zealand, had the Tars won, the Reds won. We swept it, mate. And then even the Brumbies, well, they won, but the Force played sick as well. Like it was literally the perfect week for Shane Rugby, had that kick gone over. And I've asked questions on Twitter just before we came on tonight. And one of the questions we got was the million-dollar question, why can't Aussie 10s kick under pressure? We had Donaldson lose that game against Italy. Ed Med has lost two games now. There's plenty more. They're ones that come to mind straight away, but there's plenty more. And obviously, I'm throwing this out as a pejorative. And really, you got to drill it down and look at the percentages, right? I'm sure if you did the stats, I wonder how they stack up to their Kiwi counterparts or the South African or European counterparts. I don't know. So I'm sort of going off anecdotal instinct here. We have some good kickers, but it's been a long, long time since we had one of those kickers. Mike Harris was one of them. Elton Flatley, Matt Burke, where they stood to the mark and you just expected it to go over. I feel like we have a lot of 70 to 80% kickers. And then when the pressure's on, they just fucking miss. What's that about? Like, can we pinpoint what that is and how do you correct it? Is it just more games? Is it the fact that we don't value kicking in junior rugby? Like, you know, we all played, Jim and I played rugby here in Australia growing up. No one takes a three. Unheard of. You just go for the try. That's how rugby's played here. Is there not a game exposure to goal kicking? Is it not valued? You know, and it's too hard to acquire those skills. Although, what's going on? Why can't we kick those goals? Because that was a kickable goal. Yeah, the ref can get fucked. He moved it 10 meters backwards. But either way, he still should have kicked it. What's going on, boys?
We're probably at that time where it needs to be in the contract of the kicker. It's required to do X amount of minutes per week kicking from the tee at these locations on the field. Because I reckon the answer is I just reckon they practice it enough. Not that they're under practicing it. Not that they're not putting the time in, but it's not what they're obsessed with. Like, you got to be obsessed with it to do it. You got to eat it for breakfast, lunch, dinner, dream it, vision board it, roast it, chop it up, serve it with some veggies. That's how much you need to want it.
What do you reckon, Richard?
Well, first of all, I think a lot of them do practice a lot. But I think it comes back to exposure in a game. It, because it's Super Rugby, and in previous years, probably the game hasn't been that on the line that much. And because it's Super Rugby also, there's a lot more kicking to the corner. And I think that's great. You want to obviously score tries. But if we actually look at it objectively, the last few rounds, Australian kickers have actually done well. Tane Edmonds actually kicked reasonably well, but he hasn't kicked under pressure. And when you don't kick enough in a game under pressure, because A, games have not been close, and B, you value kicking to the quarter ball, you just don't get exposure to it. I think Tame Edmund is kicking hundreds of goals in there, but it's very different to kicking goals in your training as it is when it's 12 all in the last minute. It's just exposure.
Even go Donaldson, right? He looks perhaps the best kicker of the lot, and he hadn't missed a kick this season. Hadn't missed a kick at all. And then as soon as there are a chance of beating the Brumbies, all of a sudden can't kick.
Just think it's exposure. It's just a different animal sitting there. Yeah, it's psyche. But maybe to your point, you don't value it. You're not doing the psychology to think about, what was it? Johnny Wilkins, you talked about aiming at the center of a clown or whatever it was, kicking through the mouth or something. Maybe it's just that visualization, that repetition, because in a pressurized situation, because I cannot believe that top level kickers are not practicing and training every day.
Yeah, it's, I know. I would agree. I reckon they're putting in the same minutes as probably their counterparts, but is it the minutes that they didn't do as a junior?
Maybe, but a lot of them are very metronomic in the way that they approach the ball and do that kind of stuff. It's just exposure to dealing. And as you say, maybe it's a junior level when it's 12 all in an under 12s game or whatever, and they need to kick it. Maybe you're right.
Look,
it's just that exposure.
I'll chime in. This is what, you know, we stuck around. We went to the game. When I went and saw Freddie Michalak play a game down in Australia during the World Cup, he missed a kick from a gettable zone, similar spot as we saw Tane missed. He finished the game. France ended up on top, but he didn't go to the sheds like the boys did. He went back to that spot, man. He kicked that goal 5 more times before he allowed himself to go in. We stayed back after that game, and I didn't see Edmund did that free kick that at any point.
I question if any of that's true, but I like it, Jim. I like what you've done.
You know where my head's at.
I know where your head's at. I know where you're going with it. I do think, though, perhaps, because another question that we've got, and I will go back to the game in a moment, is who is that Wallaby 10? And I think we'd all agree that that narrative still needs to write itself.
Don't you wish you could take a little bit from all of them?
Exactly. And they're all playing brutally. But I almost think the answer is, who's the best goal kicker? Because there isn't another goal kicker in any other position. They kick for all their respective teams. And in international rugby, man, you've got to kick your goals. So it's going to be fascinating, but hopefully that's something the high performance unit can sort out or some other bullshit, because it seems pretty pertinent. On your other point.
Hang on, maybe you jump to the other point, maybe they should go to Jim's idea. Maybe put Noah in at 10 and put Carter Gordon in at 12, just as a dual playmaking axis. Maybe that's the way forward.
Exactly. And Carter's pick for exactly that. I guess that's why we pose it. No, but the other point of the physicality, it's insane, isn't it? What those players put themselves through. Just watching that warm up, like Sinclair on the field, he looks like a mild mannered reporter when you watch him on the TV. You know, what's that guy doing in the row? He's not big enough. He's the biggest human I've ever seen. When we walk past him, when we're walking around to get our seats, I couldn't believe how big he was.
Yeah, giant.
He doesn't stack up in terms of size. Those men are fucking enormous. The physicality of rugby is off the charts, isn't it?
Mm. But you know what? Who surprised me the size of him? I'd love to get your take on this, Blake, actually. Well, who surprised me of his size was Ned Hannigan. Looked very large as a human on Friday. What did you think of his performance? How is he tracking towards that, that John Hill's medal?
Mitch Marth, Rocks and Diamond. Can't be every week, Rich.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's a slow build. But without getting too much into the game, the Tars obviously played pretty well. We could have swept it, man. I wish that kick went over. But I thought the Crusaders getting pumped by the Drua in the next one did take the shine off the Tars just a smidge.
Mm.
and their performance last week, if we're going to be honest with it. But yeah, positives, cards, I enjoyed it.
Positives, why? Max Jorgensen is a 19. What a talent he is. And I hope he doesn't get overplayed this year and you know, play too much, because we don't want to obviously ruin his progression. But just as a 19-year-old, just pure physically, skill set, what an exciting talent for Australia moving forward. And just seeing him in the flesh as well definitely looked bigger than what he does on the TV. So exciting for Australia moving forward. But I have to say the Highlanders didn't overly impress me either. I think they're in for a, you know, maybe finishing in that seventh seed position. I think there's a lot of growth for them to do this year as well, the Highlanders.
Yeah. Tim? Fine.
And it was lovely running into people who listened to the pod. Stadium. That was, I apologize about my behavior.
Lot of love.
Jim did a lot of love, a lot of hugs, which was nice. How good's the rugby community? It's awesome. I have all boys. Are we going this Friday?
Love to, mate. And look, and you know what? You're right talking about the rugby community. You're absolutely right. You never meet these guys out there, but as soon as you have that common theme of love and rugby, you can have a chat about anything and just, it's so different to the tribalistic nature of football. So yeah, absolutely love going out to the rugby this week.
Before we move on though, the crowd was pretty cool. It was pretty buzzing. I was open for 20. I was still deluded. I was remembering the days we used to get 40 out there. But the 15 or 16,000, whatever it was, it felt good. And it's such a nice stadium now. But I just, I could not, what was doing with the beer lines. There was two bars open in the entire stadium. It was terrible. Like I thought we, you know, cut funding, education, healthcare, so we could have this stadium. Couldn't get a schooner. It was outrageous. No,
yeah, you're completely right. We spoke about it most of the night. I don't have a solution. I don't know why. I mean, part of the charm is going to a game where no one's at, so you don't have to wait too long for the beers. But they made it feel like there was 90,000 people there.
And maybe that was their plan. Like, if anyone knows Jim, it's very hard for him to get around. If he offers, don't make it any harder.
How'd that Guinness go down?
That was horrific.
Yeah, it's no good. Even with their AI shit going on.
All right, so the Crusaders.
Easy to get a Krispy Kreme, though. Very easy.
As many Krispy Kremes as you like.
Or a waffle. Didn't you get a waffle as well, Blake, at one point?
I thought about it, and I just want you guys to ridicule me.
Or the popcorn, too. Talking about ridicule, we've already kind of mentioned it, the Crusaders, after going 10-0 up, obviously then conceding 20 unanswered points. We need to ridicule them more. Is this just a transitional period in between, obviously, into the penny era? Or should we just pile on a little bit more, Jim? What do you reckon?
It's their culture, mate. They don't know who they are. They don't know what their standard is. They're not meeting it week to week. They're a couple of leaders shy of a beautiful hotel.
I just robbed Penny, mate. Why would have you taken that job?
Why would they have given it to them? The history that this organization has, he hasn't won a Super Rugby game since 1996 when he beat the Crusaders.
Three times in a row. No, what a stitch up. Hey, do you want the job? By the way, they've never lost a game for 5,000 years, but every single player's leaving, including the entire coaching staff. We'll give you Will Jordan and a couple others, but they're all injured for the season. Anyway, all the best, mate. If you lose, that's all the rugby public will talk about. Have fun.
It could be a masterstroke, though, knowing that this squad's quite young and not probably going to stick it together, looking at the other New Zealand teams running. Let's give it to a shit coach so we can blame him.
I do think, though, New Zealand will have the wherewithal to stick with Rob Penny, stick with the 9, stick with the 10, and build a team. And by the end of the season, perhaps they'll be marching again.
It works if Rob Penny's doing his job and developing these players.
They're just worse. So much
talent.
Like, you look at their 1 to 15.
It's New Zealand, mate. Go down to the IGA.
Only blokes you would even recognise are Scott Barrett, Harvey, who I think is out of position, and Sever Reese, who's a shit bloke.
Yeah.
Like, who are the rest of them?
Comes through in his rugby, doesn't it?
He's a very good rugby player. But who are the rest of them? Like, so we're often talking, I think we get caught up talking about a jersey because it's the Crusaders jersey. But if you look at the blokes wearing it, I don't know who they are, man. Like, if it was those players in a Highlanders jersey, I'd be tearing strips off them. So I just don't, think they're there. But I do think we need to focus on the positive, which is the Drua have the greatest win percentage against the Crusaders against any other team. The Drua winning at home again. And the Drua getting the first win of the season, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, just before we jump onto the Drua, do you think even after three rounds, the aura then has already left the Crusaders jersey? Or is it departing, or is it still there?
I'm going to say departing. It's still a pretty special jersey.
They've got a tough couple of runs, mate. Their next three games are not easy. I don't know if you've looked at the schedule. Their next win's coming round 8 against the Tars.
Get the return pick. But you know what? To talk about the Drua, you're absolutely right. Just the number of meters they had, defenders beaten, offloads was just, it was electrifying again. You know, just think about the fact that they only made 58 tackles in the game, which showed how much possession they
actually, how do you do it, Richard?
Actually had. It's called an app, mate.
Do you sit there and count the tackles?
You see these notepad, haven't you?
Are you counting the offloads live time?
Like, no,
are
these, I watch it back,
you
mate.
Could spit out live?
I watch it back. It's all right. It's all right. I watch it back. I spend hours preparing for this podcast, you know, Jim.
He has it for breakfast. He has it for lunch. He has it for dinner. There was actually one weekend I remember.
Does he chop it up and serve it with veggies?
He does. I remember there's one weekend where he told me a stat he got it wrong. And I thought, all right, see you, mate. Saw him off at my front door. He took off. I looked outside 2 hours later, sitting in his car, watching the tape, going over it again.
Don't lie, mate. You've never invited me round to your house. What are you talking about? Yeah? Don't lie to the public.
I don't let the British in.
Yeah, exactly. I love a good meaty stat, right? Okay, so now moving on.
I never leave. Works.
Oh, yeah. And talking about stats, the Western Force, when are they going to actually come to the party?
Don't go to the negative. Let's go that the Brumbies showed up. They've been MIA for 120 minutes straight. The first half of this game, the Brumbies should be really scared, and they returned in the second half. They looked like the Brumbies again.
Never in doubt.
I received a text message from you, like, lamenting the Brumbies, saying they threw away. The only reason why they didn't win because the Force didn't kick their goals, mate. That was the intel you used.
Because the Brumbies didn't show up till the second half.
So it's more about the Force rather than the Brumbies, right?
Yeah, the Force looked good.
This is it, right? This is and Turley, but this is the Donaldson v. Lolasio show. And Donaldson, mate, his first half performance, I've never seen anything like it. I didn't know he could run, let alone that slow, butter with a hot knife. Where has that fucking thing going?
Yes, butter with a hot knife through butter.
That's it, hot knife through butter. He was carving them up. How was he getting through? I've never seen him make a line break. I'm sure he has, but none in the memory bank.
Yeah. He's on fire, mate. He's having an absolute ripper of a season. I thought Nick Wyatt had a ripper of a game. God, he's a good bloke. There was a news article before the game about Lonergan and will there be banter? And he said that part of the reason I left was because Lonergan was too good to not be playing and I wanted to see him progress. He's such a good human. Anyway, I thought Wyatt Donaldson was sick. That's a this 10 discussion in Australia about who the 10 is so fascinating because I almost think you go continuity. Like, do you go a 9 and 10 together?
So White and Donaldson are your first choice?
No, I'm not saying, but I'm saying it's a fascinating, like, you go around, so Tate's probably your front runner at halfback.
So you reckon Liner?
He's playing sick, man. He's playing really, really well, but I don't reckon Liner. And then you go down, okay, Carter Gordon, he probably doesn't have a 9 with him that you could go with. White and Donaldson, it's an interesting combination. Jake Gordon, not luck it is. The halves debate, man, what Schmidt's 9 and 10 looks like, only he knows.
I think it's a big...
A lot of hands are coming up.
Yeah, but it's also depending on what Starley wants to play. Does he want to play off 10? Does he want to play off 9? And that's a exactly. That's a big question that Smith's got to answer. And if you look
The answer is obvious. We don't have it in the 10. It's got to be the 9. We don't have the experience Tate in the 10.
Or White. Both Tate or White can control the game at 9. So you go with one of those, then who's your 10?
Well, you can't have Carter Gordon because I think Carter Gordon prefers quicker delivery and playing off him when the defense is going backwards looking for space. Whereas I think when they snipe and play off 9, I think it's more of a Noah role rather than
I reckon. And the reason Noah. I'm not, who's your best defender? I tell you what, it's not Noah.
It's Carly Gordon's your best defender.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Doesn't shirk his responsibility though. He stands in the channel and puts a hit on, but I think Carly Gordon genuinely likes tackling.
Mm. Just like you two.
Yeah. It's salivating. Anyway, we digressed it, but we're going to be having that conversation all year. And it really is how Schmidt sees the game. Mm. It's such a salivating complex. But I thought for the Brumbies in the second half, some other blokes started to carry.
Frost played well.
Frost played well. I think Swain is very well, very underrated in Australian rugby because of a few dumb cards, but he's an abrasive second rower, and I think him in the row, Hooper at 6, is a much better looking pack.
I agree.
So I thought they played well in the row. I thought Tour at 12 didn't have a blinder, but he carries, which they didn't have last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought some of them were always a bit nice on. It was a bit shit Muirhead.
Yep, I agree.
He's been shit all year.
Contract too. He's just signed a new contract with Brumbies.
I think the real story here was the, which is awesome. I keep talking about front rowers, was the Brumbies reserve front row. Pollard should, when they came on, just obliterated the force out of the game at scrum time. Made such a difference, which is great because we've heard the raps on Pollard for so long. And I actually think the bench was a huge, huge part of this game. Those two came on and dominated where the force bench came on and really didn't offer much at all.
It was chalk and cheese. It was chasm-like, the difference between the run-on team and the bench that came on for the force. You can see they spent a lot of money in that run-on team, but you're right. The impact players or interchange players did not get it done. There's some weak, not weak, because they're way better than I, but the gap is just huge between the difference between the two. And I think they're going to struggle for the entire season. They'll stay in games and then just tire or just...
I think so. As we go. Yeah, obviously they've still got a few injuries, especially up front.
Mm.
But they played really well, the force, and I think they should be. They played an excellent 60 minutes the week before. They played an excellent 40 minutes. Mm. Whether they can squeeze enough out of the bench, but I think Borton in particular played exceptional. Their halves played exceptional. Stewart always plays well. Potter's having a ridiculous season. But there's just not enough about him. Brumbies, good. They finally showed up. That first half, I was really, really worried. I like the balance of this team a bit better. I'm looking for Alalatoa, Shoup and Pollard to all, push for front row selection. Give them a bit more physicality. So
in the shortest of short answers, is next week's game for the Force a must win at home to Pacifica? Yes or no?
Short answer, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Winnable, carry the form. Boys just need to stay up, man. They've had a few dirty defeats. Boys need to stay up.
Yeah, Nick White said some good stuff. Like, it's not about the outcome, it's about the process. And we got our process right this week.
It's quitter talk.
I think they just need to stay the course. There's something cooking there. It's just the half a season behind the rest of the comp, I think.
A team that's definitely not half a season behind the comp is the Hurricanes. Like I already watched the very quick highlights between the Canes and the Blues, but what a game it seemed from the short highlights, and just the Canes just continued to roll on. I predicted that the Blues would win because, very star-studded at times, that Blues team. But just the Hurricanes just pulled it together, and kudos to them. First game at home and obviously this year, and a big win for them.
Mate, when you've got four games on the Jonathan, you're talking divorce if you watch them all. So something's got to give. So I only watched this in the peripheral vision. I couldn't comment on it other than you would have thought the Blues were favourites. They seem to be doing what the Blues do. They're the Tars of New Zealand rugby. get a good squad and never deliver. They just don't, I don't know. You would have expected them to deliver. The only thing I got out of it is how bloody good is Roygaard at halfback. And that one run Naholo did looked absolutely terrifying, but I didn't watch it, so I can't comment.
One game I did watch, sorry, Jim, and I know you've created a dossier of notes on the Canes and Blues, but I'm just going to move on for time.
That's fine. We can come back to them next week.
Yeah, thank you. Just the Reds Chiefs. What did you think, Jim? Obviously, fantastic to see the Reds get up, but just the overall big picture of the game. What were your thoughts?
It goes from the Mideast. It goes through the Mideast, Richard. That's what I think. What a win.
You know what? You could have gone north, mate.
They're
the most northern team.
People are keeping me very accountable for my direction. So just the Mideast is where we'll leave it. But look out. This was the Reds hatching. And I mean that in the chicken coming out of the egg, not the popular shading technique. This was an outstanding performance by the Reds. To hold on at the end, show of hands, who thought they were done?
This is a podcast, mate. Just want to let you know.
Well, they were done. I had them gone for all money. And the fight that they showed, the belief, the want, like, I don't know why. I don't know how you conjure that up. I know how you do it. It's culture. But, like, what a game. You guys are good at going through the players. I'll let you do all that. But Harry Wilson is playing himself into that 8 jersey. His work rate through the roof. His passion is infectious. I can't speak enough of the 10, 12, 13. Like, that dude who came in for Paisami, like, yeah, he made some errors, but every time he got the ball, his instincts were unreal. Great impulses. And then Fluke, it's no Fluke.
Really good, mate. He reminds me of a Rob Horn Fluke.
But this is a dude who's really come into it. And this is, you know, every now and then I need to remind myself, stay patient with these players. And look, if you see the form in which Fluke's playing, it's unreal. It's just how long do they cut Sully and then make this the best team in Australia?
Man, I actually thought Sully had a decent game for him this week. He's not been bad.
Work rate through the roof. Really looking to get involved. He set it up. It was his best game. But just, man, so many silly things.
Yeah, props on the positives. We'll get to Sully. Incredible. This is the Chiefs, mate. We said they were one with a bullet last week and there was a gap to everyone else. And they didn't take this lightly. They threw the kitchen sink at the Reds and the Reds were up for the program. Every single player stood up. I said it last week. I'll say it again. The 7, 8, 9 for Australian rugby is sorted. The combination between Wilson and McWright, the way they just find each other for offloads and even breakdowns and defense are just remarkable. And then their combination with McDermott is brilliant. The liner, I think I tweeted it during the game, just how calm he is. It's just felt for so long, Wallaby 10s. I'd say both Quaid and Bernard Foley had that look of panic about them. Like, oh, shit, we got the ball. I don't know if we're ever going to get it again. Let's try and score. Exceptional players. You guys know what I think about Quaid. I think Foley's just as good. But liner is calm. He just feels, of all the 10s we've spoken about, he just feels like he's happy to pass it or run it. Like, he doesn't feel like everything's an emergency. He feels like he's building a game. And I'm really impressed with him, massively impressed with his boot and his defense. I think a lot of credit has to go to him. I think that's been the missing piece for a few years with the Reds. And then everyone else Jim mentioned, but a special shout out to probably Liam Wright, who's playing sick, but Fluke as well for me is just a rugby player at outside center rather than an athlete at outside center. And then to think that they did this week without Pataia, without Paisami, is just ridiculous. The one thing that I would say, I do think their reserve props saved the day for them, but are significantly better than their run-on props. But I know for teams, sometimes that's a bit of a secret weapon or whatever it might be. But I feel like with their run-on props, their scrums are a bit of a concern for me. But their reserve props, nah, not at all. Those guys are beasts. Awesome. An incredible day for Australian rugby. Edge of your seat shit. And just played amazing. This is the, it's the same as the Tigers last week. Can they back it up? They beat the Chiefs last year as well, the Reds. So can they go again? And you feel like under Les Kiss that they can go again. There's a genuine feeling like it's a complete team. It's a complete performance.
It's a buzz now. It's a buzz. You know, it raises questions about Pattaya, this, doesn't it? Because we've got Fluke coming in here, running the show, having a great game, natural rugby player. He's definitely put on some kilos. He's making Adline. He's holding it down. And it seems like when you got Pattaya at 13.
But they don't. He's 15 this year. The 13 Fluke's a lock.
Mm. Fluke's nailed it.
I'll go back over here.
It's but just because you've been working so long on
Jock Campbell. I think your point would still be relevant for Jock Campbell. Mm. He's a fullback's fullback.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like you, what he does, and to give him as much space and time to do what he's capable of doing, things get taken away, is the point that I was making, where you just play strong, decisive rugby here, where everyone knows there's no freaky sidestep or give him a chance in space. Everyone knows what's happening, and there's benefits to that.
Mm. You know what? Just to bring it all together, I think what was interesting when we looked back on the Waratahs versus Crusaders game, there was an element of, it was awesome that the Tars won, but it was a kind of like a shock, or not lucky because they executed well. But this game felt like, I understand that the Reds had less possession or less time in the opponent's half, but felt like the Reds were more deserving. Like they earned this win. There was like, this was not a fluke. This was a good win. No one could argue that they deserved that win on the day. And it came from a number of different places. And you're right. Ravi and Tumanga Rala made a big difference when they came on. You know, the type five, I think, played exceptionally well. They got through a lot of work within the game. The commitment, you can see a change in culture since Les Kiss has come in, you know, in terms of making that extra tackle, like doing that extra bit. But my question about the Wallabies moving forward is, Valentine and Wilson, are they too similar, you know, in terms of McWright as well? Is that a balanced back row? That would just be my question.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I'm thinking about this. There's an obsession with, once you go international, with specializing the positions. Mm. And at this provincial level, there seems to be more of an acceptance of just get the better guys on the field. And if you have a bit of a weakness here, and I look at a Liam Wright there, and I think he's sort of a quintessential because he's not a 6'6". You know, he's probably not quite enough of a ball runner or a line out jumper to be an international six, but he just works at a provincial level. And I think if you went Valentini and Wilson in the back row, you are perhaps a line out jumper short.
Yeah,
I think that they are tall enough to jump. It's just neither of them jump often. There is an obsession with getting a traditional six into six for the Wallabies, like a Hannigan or a Tom Hooper or even a Leota, someone who's big enough to play in the row. But I would be, at this point, I'm more, let's just pick the best, the form three players. Valentini's your form ball carrier. McWright's your form on the ball. Wilson's your form link with a bit of X factor. For me, they're the best three in the back row. But yes, it does leave you a little short. But I would just have that height on the bench because I just think those three are head and shoulders outperforming the rest at the moment. And I think they deserve a cracking gold.
Mm. And kudos to Ryan Smith. It was one of his better performances as well in that. You know, we mentioned about Uru before in that back row, but I thought he played well in the row as well for the Reds. But just as much as they lost, obviously, just love watching McKenzie and Stevenson. He glides Sean Stevenson at the moment. He's just a very good rugby player. Just has that. It just looks like everything's so easy to him. But kudos to the Reds back line. They obviously shut him down at times, but as I say, he's just a very aesthetically pleasing rugby player to watch.
Yeah, loves to playing chess where everyone else is playing checkers.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are on another level, McKenzie and Stevenson, an absolute another level. Well, whilst we're on this one, what did you guys think about the lot of talk about the hit on Liner, the late shot on Liner? Thoughts?
Jim?
Is that the one where he was mildly concussed after?
No, more like 12 broken ribs, that one. Ledshot, Shelbler, Noah.
Not in your dossier, Jim. No, not in your match report.
I don't remember that one. Is he all right?
Oh, he went off not long after. But on that note,
how's he pulled up now?
He broke his ribs, mate.
Harry McLaughlin Phillips, when we talk tens, don't leave him out of the conversation.
Like no, he did very well.
There's a version where he's your bolter into the Wallaby squad.
Oh, you're crazy.
Not as your run-on, but as your development 10.
Yeah, maybe if Eddie was at the reins.
He's fucking out. Don't do that. Let this kid come on. But he's an outstanding rugby union player. I think he's 19. Jorgensen's 19. That's very exciting. That's very, very exciting. What do you think about the hit on Liner, Richard?
Look, to be honest with you, look, is it fair or not fair? Not 100% sure. Like, if I'm honest, to be honest with you, the thing is, I'm just going to Google it now if I'm going to be totally honest with you.
Not in your wheelhouse either, is it?
No, it's not at the moment.
Mark, you guys aren't paying attention. Everyone was blowing up. I'll give you my take then while you do sprinting walk in your fucking nuts. Jesus. I would say I would be a hypocrite if I sat here wanting it to be a card. I love that the game just got on with the game and we didn't have a card to interrupt it. It was late. It was a penalty. Was it a shoulder charge? I don't know. There's an attempt to rat there. How late becomes a yellow? Well, it's probably on the cusp. I was happy to see the game go on, in my personal opinion. However, if we're being consistent, to think Marika got a red card because he slapped someone at the World Cup. Like, if you think about some of the other yellows and reds that have gone out, you know, probably should have been a red with a prison sentence. But I was fine with the decision. But I can understand why people were quite aggrieved. And there was an incident in the first half where Fangasi, it was definitely a shoulder to the Chiefs player's head. Again, I was fine to let the game go on. I think it was a rugby contact. However, if you're being consistent, it was a red card 6 months ago. Again, I prefer the game rule this way. But I don't know. Thought I was talking about. Here's me complimenting the refs for letting the rugby be played. But there was a lot of talk on the socials about those two hits.
Well, I think you've covered it. I think you've covered it in depth, Lee. There, Blake. I think I would completely agree with every sentiment that you've just said. Wouldn't you agree, Jim?
Done really well. Absolutely.
No, fuck you.
Spoken for
this whole state.
Without a doubt, it's the best game. Best game in a long time.
Yeah, I agree.
Still looks like he's jogging. Unavalo. Still looks like he's jogging. Still fell over 3 times in defense. I'm the one who always comes on here and thinks about his Melbourne Storm footage and says, just pick and stick, pick and stick. But Jesus.
What's with the jogging thing?
Why isn't he running?
But he's considered, look, I think it's one of his better games. You know, he had, 9 carries. He beat 4 defenders. I think he just needs to play. Like, he's been so injured. And I think we already have higher expectations of him because he has such a big contract, you know? And I think, and look, I understand that. It's the reasons why, but he is building into it. And I think he's a casualty of the Eddie era as well, of just picking him and being a part of that setup. So,
yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Richard. I just wish he would run fast. That's all I'm saying. But I think I've hit the nail on the head there. What an incredible round of Super Rugby, an incredible round of Six Nations, brilliant rugby all round. But there was plenty of off-field drama as well. So we have to touch on a little bit of that, and then we do have some Twitter questions. So some of the off-field drama that's obviously come out, we leaked it a long time ago, but the overspend of Eddie Jones at the Rugby World Cup has come out at $2.6 million.
Pennies.
You know, what does it cost to send 30 blokes to play rugby for 5 weeks? How do you spend that budget plus another $2.6 million?
Where'd you place the blame? I'm being serious now. Where do you place it? Do you place it on the chief financial officer who's given carte blanche to Eddie? Do you blame Eddie? But then you can't blame Eddie because he's been given the freedom. Like, where does the responsibility lie within that?
It's a good question. I think Eddie's been irresponsible, but I would almost want my coach to want the best.
I would agree.
To want the drones, want the extra physio, clearly fucking use none of it for the right. So I think it is, it's the CEO, it's the CFO, whatever other acronym you can think of. It's those clowns.
What I can't understand is they budgeted for the semis. They came home 2 weeks early and were still over budget.
Imagine if they'd actually stayed in there. Like I think about, imagine all the people listening to this podcast who have kids playing rugby and are paying hundreds of dollars in registration fees and then buying the training kit, buying the boots and financially clawing to get their kid to footy. The people.
It's a long boat. The French dollar.
No, just think about how much money fans put into rugby union, whether it's their stand subscription, going out to the game, buying a jersey. It's not cheap. And if you think about it, fans are happy to do it because they love the code and they want the best players playing Australian rugby. And to hear that we just pissed $2.6 million up against the wall for that shithouse performance is nothing short of disgraceful. It's fucking abhorrent. How does that happen? I put it down to just a bunch of beta males. I think Eddie just walked all over it. Everyone drunk the Kool-Aid and thought he was a genius and was, you watched that documentary, they're terrified of him.
Yeah. What do you think of the, what else okay about in that document? And were the 23, wasn't it? 23 Rugby Australia recommendations across a myriad of different things.
Most of it sound like gobbledygook corporate bullshit. I mean,
that was
23. Is it just 23 accurate selections in the match day squad?
There was a lot about selections.
Yeah, and look, I think that's the thing. It's keeping it really simple. Like as much as there's those recommendations for high performance and whatever it was, strength and conditioning, culture. I'm assuming you wrote that bit, Jim. It comes back to simple basics about selections, continuity. You know, and just making sure that we've got correct pathways and making sure the correct things are in place in inverted commas.
The subtext to half of it was not let a fucking cowboy like Eddie Jones walk all over us ever again.
Mm.
Some checks and balances in place in case there's another lunatic.
Mm.
But I do think that one of the things that came across and sort of the mail that you hear is that they have well and truly lost the change room.
Are you, is that another thing you're leaking?
No, not leaking. I think that's common knowledge at this point. Okay. There weren't many Australian rugby players particularly keen on staying in the Australian rugby program at the end of the World Cup. There was no trust left. And the subtext of those 22 recommendations seems to be restoring that trust. But I think it'll take some personnel turnover. And a lot of time to restore that trust. Because how could you trust it if you're a player? Mm. Like the way they were selected, the way money's been spent, the way they're asked to take pay cuts, like it has just been a fucking debacle for so long. Like why would you trust that setup if you're a player?
It's always that thing where it takes such a long period of time to build a culture and build a connection and build that trust and cohesion, but it only takes one madman or madwoman to rip it apart, and how quickly it gets ripped apart and how long it's going to take to build it back up again will determine how successful the Wallabies are this year.
And I agree with everything you said there, Richard, and I'm definitely guilty of this too. The one madman rhetoric is handy. We have Eddie. To say is that madman, but I think it runs deeper than that. There was a lot of idiots in charge of that program to get us to that stage. The other thing in the recommendations I thought was there was a lot of the players and the board. And I go, fuck you. What about the fans?
Mm.
I even fuck the board. Like, yeah. Where's the trust between the players and the fans and Australian rugby and the fans?
Yeah.
I thought that there was a bit absent from me. And then if you're going to release it publicly, chuck us a dot point, guys.
Mm. You're absolutely right. Because you always talk about, you know, culture, whatever it is. Unfortunately, a sport is only successful if people buy into the sport and turn up at the turnstiles. And unfortunately, To do that, you have to get that connection within it. You know, to use their football analogy, and Postecoglou, fans were not turning up at White Hart Lane or the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It was a bit of a, no one wanted to go there. It was quite a horrible atmosphere. But then since he's talked about trying to build the fans in and build the narrative that we're one team, one unity, it's created such a better atmosphere. And you're absolutely right. To build that layer of building the fans in is so important, because that will build that will make people return back to the stadium. So it's a shame the fans are not in there.
All right. And discussing another off-field thing, which we're ill-equipped to actually comment on, I'll throw to you, Jim.
Mm.
And that's the Rebels suing Australian rugby. Thoughts?
Do they have a case? I don't know the ins and outs of the allegations and the finances, but it's a little bit of a tactic to... Yeah, I can't rule out the strategy behind this can all go away if you let us stay. You know, it seems like it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to be leaving the comp at the end of the year. What's the point of, like, what you might as well go down swinging. You're either A, trying to hit them for all they're worth for the lack of support across the years, which they might have a case, or they really do think that they're being unfairly treated and there is still some hope that that doesn't actually come about. And part of that is putting them on their back foot a little bit. That's sort of what I read between the lines on that. But, mate, what do I know? Hamilton is.
No, it's clear. It's all due to the fact that they were promised a certain amount of money during the COVID pandemic time. I think that's what it's all about, isn't it, Blake? I think. And the fact is that because I think Rugby Australia didn't get the equity, then basically Rugby Australia said, well, we can't give you the money that we don't have. I think that's what they're potentially fighting over. But I think to your point, Jim, I think it's just going down swinging. And I think if they do disappear, I think the Rebels want to point blame at someone other than themselves. Because I think if they go down without a fight, then everyone's going to say that they mismanaged. But if Rugby Victoria can then say basically it's not their responsibility, they save a little credit from it. But I don't know.
They used to have this argument about common ground, Rugby Australia, where it's not in rugby's interest. We're struggling for you to sue us, or we don't know what to do. And there was something that everyone was a part of. It felt like there was maybe more of a team or a community, that the Rebels would take a hit for the greater good. Mm. But I guess all this coming out, this cash spending on Eddie and fucking, you know, how quickly they are going to just throw him to the Wolves and now you're out, and that's been completely shattered. Even the Brumbies must be feeling a bit about that now too. Like all of that sense of community across the country has just been absolutely shattered, and the rugby show on the fucking back foot, man. I don't think they actually know how they're going to get out of this one.
Yeah, but I think we need to take a step back for a moment and say that the majority of fans will not go into the nuances of the financial issues that are surrounding, obviously, the Rebels and the Brumbies at the moment.
That's why we got you, mate.
Play a conversation.
Yeah, but I think it's important to focus on the fact is that the rugby at the moment is gold. You know, the competition is competitive. And I think that's the narrative that we want to be talking about. That's the storyline, that we want to be talking about. Because if we focus too much on the negativity around the topic that you just mentioned, people start to tune out and we need to focus.
It's like, let's get back to the rugby. So let's get back to the rugby. All I'd say it is ugly. Well, can we have one last off-field drama before our Twitter questions?
Go for it.
Came out, leaked in the Herald a couple of days ago, that Pattaya sniffing around rugby league and Japanese rugby. I tweeted, and I just think, I get it, we're broke, right? And a lot of people wanting to defend the AAU have come out and said, you know, he hasn't delivered. See you, mate. If we can't afford you, we can't afford you. I just look at it and think, you've got someone who's 23 years old and has been to two World Cups. 23 and been to two World Cups. He's been in the Wallaby setup 5 years. He's 105 kilos and 1.91 meters. The raw potential you're dealing with.
And I just say, that is some outstanding stats. I don't even have those kind of stats.
The raw potential you're dealing with there.
You got real close to the mic for that one, Richard.
I did.
Let alone he's been coached by Brad Thorne and Eddie Jones, never had a consistent position, and has just been dogged with injuries. You are dealing with someone who the sky is the absolute limit for Australian rugby. And, you know, what it sounds like, what we've heard on the street is that the AAU are asleep at the wheel. And all these other people have come in and put this off on the table. I would not fault the bloke for thinking, fuck yeah, you never consistently picked me. I don't feel backed. I don't feel supported. See ya. And I guess at this point, I think I understand Australian rugby saying we can't afford you. But how do you spend $2.6 million on a World Cup, $1.6 million on Soli, and you let Mark Demoinituasi and Jordan Bataille walk out? Like, it just boggles the mind what any other country, bar maybe New Zealand and South Africa, would do to have Demoinituasi, Jordan Bataille in their setup. Whether, you know, I'm not saying they make their 15 now, but just to have a player of those physical attributes in their setup, how are they so shit at managing this? It boggles the mind.
I think I don't disagree with anything you said, but I actually think Jordan Bataille, irrespective of all the things you just said, needed to leave anyway. He's plateaued, and I feel like he needed to have changed of scenery. So,
no, I just interrupt quickly. Yeah. Let's Kiss and Joe Schmidt change that.
Joe Schmidt, yes. Les Kiss, maybe not so much. I think he just needs to get out of Queensland. I don't think he needs a fresh start. I think going to Japan, going to Europe would have been a fantastic, in France, wherever in Europe, would have been a fantastic for him to grow. We saw the benefit of Noah even going over to Toulon for a short period of time.
But I think isn't that depressing?
Yeah, but
take Noah, take, you can litany of Australian rugby players. Mm. They need to go overseas to get good because our setup's so shit.
Yeah, but I think just for him, because he was bled so young into that team, I just think a change of scenery, even if it means coming to the Waratahs or going to the Brumbies, I think that would have been, it would have been a new start and part of his career.
The
even
expectations have, around him have always been so high.
I think
leaving that environment. Sorry, Rich, I realized I cut you off halfway through.
No, you go for it.
But been around him so high that leaving that environment where he's got to earn his stripes once again is almost where he's at this point. And now's the best time to do it. You got time. It's 2 years away from any comp that actually means it's salt. That's not true, but you know what I mean. The World Cup, the Lions Tour, this is his time.
It's a shame because ultimately for the Wallabies to be successful, they need a pool of high-quality players. And he would definitely, he fits into that mold in terms of a high quality, has a potential to be a high quality player. And obviously, if he stays in the Australian system, it makes the team stronger, makes the Super Rugby product more, better. But the problem is, he's also a result of being a back, you know, fitting in a role where there's a plenty of them. There's not as good as him, I understand that, but the Rugby Australia probably going, we can find another not as good. Don't get me wrong, I'm not agreeing with it. But it's not like a position where there's not an endless supply. I know not as good as Jordan Bataille.
I agree, but 5 years of investment to drop the bag.
I agree.
Just as you might get some good coaches and a good run of free from injury if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Boggles the mind. Hey, we've had a few questions as well, so let's fight.
Hit them.
Is it time to consider the Crusaders struggling?
We did that for a good 20 years.
Yeah, all right.
Earlier in the podcast.
I didn't proof these. All right, next one. This is interesting. When should Aussie teams think of rotating players?
Never. It's a short
three rounds to go by. It will be a brutal and tough season.
Model doesn't work.
No, need to play every game.
I actually agree with you boys entirely. Thoughts on referee inconsistency over last week's matches? I didn't see.
It's also a very subjective game, so you're always going to get inconsistencies, unfortunately.
It's what makes our game our game.
Absolutely. Next.
We've sort of touched on this a little bit, but who's playing themselves into a Wallaby squad?
To be fair, the squad was so large that Eddie picked last time. Surely he picked everybody. It's the same 50 players that went last time.
Who's playing himself out of it?
Yeah, I think that's more of a question, more than playing into it.
I think these sort of Wallaby questions just need time. We just need time to digest.
It's absolutely.
Weeks in. Mm. Next one's for you, Jim. Where does it come through?
Huh?
Where does it come through?
Okay. The Mideast.
Next one, we've sort of hit. Australian depths at 10. Who will be the starting halfback for Wallabies? I guess on behalf of all of us, it remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited to watch it play out.
Tate, because Nick White is too nice of a bloke, mate. He wouldn't take his jersey. He's too nice.
Next question, Jim's Hunt. Question mark. How were they?
Me? You're asking me how my hugs are? They're a warm embrace. Every international conflict can be soothed with one of my hugs, mate. You name it. Name, give me a destination in the world. I'll go over there and hug it out.
Can we put some suggestions? Where would you like Jim to go to give some hugs? Surely.
If we're at the Blues game, come give Jim a hug.
Yeah.
Love. Come for a warm embrace. We've sort of hit these. Do the Brumbies and Reds make the core of the Wallabies this year?
Remains to be seen. Too early, mate. There's only been one round of Super Rugby. It's too early.
All right. This one was a cracking question, but you two are fucking useless. Your thoughts on Tom Liner, the tackle, and the handling of his removal. I guess, you know, it's the only one who remembers that part of the game. I spoke about the tackle earlier, and I would say that even though I thought the tackle was maybe just a penalty, I agree with the referee there. I do think Liner, for his safety, probably needed to go off the field. And that's why if they're fair dinkum about HIA.
That's what I thought.
You've got to take the player off, even if it isn't a card. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Or even for an RIA.
Where are we going here?
It's a rib injury assessment.
With Reece Hatchell carving it up, looking like Carlos Spencer, do we deduce Super Rugby's not so super anymore?
I'm not quite sure I've seen Reece Hatchell carve it up with the Highlanders, if I'll be exactly honest. My question. No,
yeah, exactly. Jordy Pitoy, how would he go in league? I think he'd be outstanding. I think he's from Suits Rugby League, and I think the simplicity / boringness of Rugby League would eliminate some of the decision-making for him. So I think he'd be really good at it.
One-on-one, very, very hard to tackle. And largely, if he runs in at centre, all of those set moves end up with him in space or just needing to pass, of which he can do really, really well.
Can I
it's
ask
just whether or not he can stay healthy.
Someone's going to, you're going to laugh at me because I am comparing them, but I'm not comparing them at the same time. What's the Newcastle kid fullback, like that could play for the ball? Okay. Yeah. He kind of has that language style where Pitoy, if he gets in space, can go out wide and look to get out wide and to bring in those extra plays, kind of like he does. But I question Pitoy's defense potentially within rugby league, I would say.
Pong is a way better player than Pitoy.
Oh, of course he is. That's what I'm saying. He is way better. I'm not trying to compare them, but just the playing style of, you know, coming in out the back, you know, getting the ball. I can see kind of Pitoy doing that kind of
brain, though. He almost plays as an extra back rower in league. He's just so big. He can just carry.
You know,
there's nothing for second tackles when you just need someone to carry in your own half.
Remains to be seen, mate. Who's gone across, who's in the back line of an Australian team, over to league and given us like enough sample size to make an assessment? Like, no one's done it. Everyone, people have come close. That's why I sort of want him to go. Fuck it. Let's see what's going on.
Yeah, I'd watch it. Bask in the glow of rugby on the weekend. Even Dick will be happy with England getting up. Made spot on. It was awesome. Fuck, it was a good weekend of rugby. I absolutely loved it. Are Australian sides improving or are New Zealand sides regressing?
Is the world, am I going up in the world or is it coming down on me?
Exactly. And how good is Harry Wilson? It's the last one. A great way to end. Fucking very good.
Yes.
Yep. Very good. Definitely. Yes to all.
All right. Long one this week, but deservedly so, because I love rugby union and I love this weekend.
Was there a question?
Yeah, very quickly.
I'm done. I'm done with the question. It was the same tone. I mean, to change my tone.
No, your tone was the same.
Very quickly. And by the way, I'm saying this to you, Blake, very quickly. Next week, one word, not a whole soliloquy about it. Crusaders, Hurricanes, who's your winners, boys?
Now look at the history for this.
Oh, jeez.
Fucking with you, Rich.
Mate, the Crusaders, a bit underlooked on this podcast, if you ask me, but there's very strong case they're the best team in the comp, mate. They're the only undefeated team. They've taken them all down.
Crusaders, Jim, you just said they've lost every game.
No, I'm talking about the Hurricanes.
Hurricanes. Yeah, Canes win this.
He definitely
he's in and they're 4-0.
He definitely started with Crusaders, Jim. Play the tapes, man. Rebels, Reds.
Rebels will be up for this, and I reckon they'll bash the Reds forwards around, but Reds get it done.
I'm just not on the Rebels like you are. You and your fucking Tupou crush. I'm not in.
No, I was talking Talakai up.
You've gone very high then, by the way. That was funny. That was fun.
You're only doing that to evil the playing field. Fucking Talakai. Reds.
All right. What's the talk of the town over in Perth, mate? Force or Pacifica, Jim?
It's got to be the Force here. But to get a real assessment, we've got to look at the history. The history of the two clubs. This is a do or die for the Force, mate. If they don't get this done, reshuffle.
Pacifica are a very nice price. They're paying $3.
Yeah, yeah. They could be, like, the Force are capable of fucking shit in the bed. Absolutely.
Or she'll get it done, but if you're a betting man,
all right. If the Force don't win this, they should consider suing Rugby Australia.
So just to confirm, neither of you have actually answered the question about who is actually going to win.
Force. Subject gambling.
Oh, you just wanted one word. You should have told us.
Sorry, mate. Apologies. I'll be more explicit next time. Okay. Highlanders, Brumbies, boys.
Can't do this in a word.
Oh, shit. Where's
I've got a bad feeling about this, but I'm still going to ponies.
I'm going Landers.
Rich.
Well, just to confirm, Jim.
One word, bud.
Just one word. Where Dunedin was. Do you know where that is, Jim? Where?
It's Midwest. Midwest.
Brumbies should win this. Chiefs, Drua. Like,
with Patchell. What about Patchell? Carving up.
Carlos Spencer. Chiefs aren't losing two in a row.
And obviously the game we're going to, Waratahs Blues.
I'll drink a bit less. God, the Tars are good money.
Yeah, you got to go to Blues, man. Yeah, $4.60, though, in a two-horse race.
Yeah, So
everyone's going Blues, right?
Yeah, it's money wasted. They give you that to tempt you in, get you in there. Oh, yeah, $4.60. I'll throw a cheeky Chris McKenna at it.
All right. Okay. On that note, great round of rugby. Go England. Fantastic win against.
We're not ending the podcast with Go England. We'll say
yeah.
Fantastic round of rugby. A lot of moral victories to be had.
England is shit.
And go Italy and England. See you, boys. Bye.